Of all the very practical questions that I am asked on a regular basis and as a priest, probably one of the ones I hear most often is a very practical question of like, if I go to Mass twice in the same day, am I allowed to receive communion at both Masses? So if I go to a wedding in the afternoon and then a Saturday evening Mass, am I allowed to receive communion twice in that same day? And the answer is yes. Any Catholic can receive communion twice in the same day. So that's an easy one, but I hear that question quite a bit. Now, it's just twice. You can't receive a third time. Even a priest, only under special circumstances can a priest say three Masses in a day and so on. But twice in a day, you're good. Now, the next question I hear most frequently is some variation of today's readings, of the readings that we have this weekend. There's some variation, some question, some version of what Jesus is talking about today. So I would make an argument that these readings for this weekend are some of the most immediately practical, like day by day, living the life of a Christian, immediately practical gospels and readings that we have, maybe even throughout the whole year. Just because every single person deals with this pretty much every single day. It's not just a once in a great while. Maybe at one point in your life you'll deal with some questions like this. No, it's a daily thing for most of us. And that is what we would call in seminary the prospect of fraternal charity. How do I correct someone in a way that's good and holy and healthy and productive and will be well received and actually bear fruit? But that's the question of this weekend's readings. So you heard the gospel. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone, right? But even let's take a step back and go before that to our first reading today from Ezekiel. This is what the Lord says to the prophet Ezekiel. And you heard this, but here's what he says. Thus says the Lord, you, son of man, I have appointed to be the watchman over the house of Israel. When you hear me say something, you shall warn them for me. Right? It's the idea that we are our brother's keeper. That's essentially what Jesus is telling Ezekiel, but that applies to you and I as well. If I tell you to go warn somebody that they're doing something wrong, and you go and tell them, and they don't listen, well, that's on them, right? They will receive the consequences of that themselves. But if I tell you to go tell them something and you say, nah, I'd rather not, they not only will they perish in their sin, but you will be held responsible as well. So that's the idea, that we are our brother's keeper. And, you know, it's one of those things we can't just simply absolve ourselves to say, you know, our neighbor, maybe they have toddlers playing out in the street. Like, that's a bad deal. And we say, well, I warned them once. Like, hey, you probably shouldn't let your little 2-year-old play in the street. You don't get to sit back and say, well, I did my job. No, you are our brother's keeper. And there's a moral responsibility when there's a harm that is being done or being caused and we see it. We have a moral obligation to speak up. That is what we would call fraternal correction. And again, for various degrees and roles, there's different levels of that. You know, when it's our kids, if we're the parent and our kids are under us, yes, we must correct them. That's what our job is. And of course, there are, again, different roles and ways that works out. But, you know, there's sometimes we get to be pretty zealous in that. And we, you know, in seminary in particular, everyone's super zealous. They want to do the right thing, and everyone wants to be set on the right path, and they want to show how smart they are, turns into this, like, fraternal correction can turn really ugly really quickly when everyone's just pointing out everyone else's flaws. As a matter of fact, when I was in college seminary, the rector got so tired of hearing complaining about our morning mass that, you know, inevitably, the topic of conversation at breakfast every day was they would nitpick every mistake. Oh, somebody mispronounced the word. Did you see him? He forgot to grab the candle. Did you? Like, that was, I'm telling you, seminary is a fishbowl, and so that's what you talk about, okay? So our rector got so tired of this that he implemented a rule, no talking about the morning mass until after lunch. Like, he just got to that point where he's just like fed up with it. Because you just get nitpicky of all this little stuff. But, you know, in seminary, I was super zealous and I was super like, you know, I'm going to be on this crusade and I'm going to help everyone fix their problems, starting with my siblings. And so I would go home on breaks and I would sit my brother or my sister down and I would go through the list of things that they're doing wrong. And every single time, they instantly corrected all of their mistakes just from pointing them out. That's not how it worked. I promise you that's not how it worked. And realistically, I mean, I did do that. That did happen. And it went about how you would imagine it would go. And truth be told, I damaged a lot of those relationships with my family because I was pointing out all their flaws. And the thing is, I wasn't wrong. It's not a good idea to be sleeping with your boyfriend or girlfriend or to move in before you're married. That's not a good idea, right? I wasn't wrong about that. Objectively, that is the truth. And so certain behaviors and actions and stuff, that harms you. But the way I went about it was less than fruitful. And instead of actually bringing a point of conversion, it caused a rift. And that's where the gospel comes in today. That's what Jesus is laying out. He's trying to show a Christian, Catholic way of fraternal correction. Like, there is a way of going about it that is more helpful than that. And so if your brother sins against him, go and tell you his fault between you and him alone. Here's the kicker, okay? This line, you might skip out on it and just not think much of it, but this is the idea. If he listens to you, you have won over your brother. That is the point. You have won over your brother. Here's what I found. In most times when we go to correct somebody else, we're not trying to win over our brother. Maybe we think we are, but really most of the time we're on some sort of crusade, some sort of campaign. We have been heart hurt and so we're trying to get back. We're trying to like be justified. There's 10,000 things that we're trying to be right. 10,000 things that we are trying to approach. And the last on that list of things is to win back over our brother. And so my approach with my siblings, I wasn't trying to win them over, truth be told. And I didn't know that at the time. I was trying to be right. And so there are some things that they taught us in seminary for fraternal correction that are actually incredibly helpful. A couple of points here. First of all, in fraternal correction, number one, and this is where our second reading comes in. The first point of fraternal correction is charity. Charity, 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 charity in all things. Now, it's easy to have charity with somebody we like and when we're not mad at them. We can give them the benefit of the doubt. They didn't know any better. They were trying their best. They were whatever. But if we're mad at somebody or if we don't particularly like them, automatically we give them the worst possible interpretation. That guy's just a plain jerk. But charity is the reading of giving them the benefit of the doubt. That maybe they genuinely didn't know better. Maybe they didn't quite understand that they really are causing harm. And charity gives them that benefit of the doubt. But also just in asking that, what is my motivation? Am I seeking to win my brother back? Am I seeking the good of the other? Or am I seeking self-righteousness for whatever reason, whatever shape that takes? That's the first principle. The second one is this. And this one is super, super tangible. You can only correct to the degree that you have affirmed or to the degree to which you have a relationship. If I'm trying to correct somebody at a level up here and I just met the guy, not going to go well. Who the heck are you? Tell me what to do. Who do you? You don't know me. You don't know my story, right? That's why those so many times where those conversations just go south because I'm trying to correct somebody above the level or degree that I have a relationship with them. It's just human nature. If I have a relationship with you and I know you care about me and I care about you, then I'm gonna at least hear you out, or at least be more inclined to hear you out and to take what you say to heart. But that's a principle. We can only correct to the degree that we have affirmed or that we have that relationship. So if you point out somebody's flaws beyond what you have a relationship with them, you will absolutely be ignored, or worse. And then here's the last thing, and this is by far the most difficult of all three. If you want to be a person who can correct well, you have to be a person who accepts correction. And I would even go a further step than that, to actively, not just accept correction, but to actually seek out correction. Oh my gosh, Father, what are you asking? What is this? Seek out correction? Yes. To actively mine correction. It's hard. And what's the biggest roadblock in correction is defensiveness. Inevitably, we get defensive. Somebody says, hey, blah, 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 and we say, well, let me give you the list of reasons why I had to do that and why that's not my fault. No. To actively seek correction from a place of humility is essentially to be coachable, right? And here's where I would really push the envelope here. Even, especially, particularly within your marriage, to ask the question, is there something I have done or something that I am currently doing that hurts you, that bothers you, that you haven't told me about? Whoa, Father, you're clearly celibate. Who's going to open that door? I'm telling you, folks, to actively seek correction, to actively open that door in vulnerability and humility to say, look, I want to move forward. I'm not trying to be a jerk on purpose. And then when you open that door and they step through it, we don't jump to defensiveness right away. Well, if you remember, you started that argument. I was against it to begin with, and you... No. Is there something that I have done or something that I am currently doing that hurts you or has hurt you? And then when they tell you or when they sing the litany of whatever the things are, you thank them. I will work on that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I didn't know that. I didn't realize. I'm sorry. Could you imagine? Could you imagine if we had the freedom, the humility, the vulnerability to act that way in all things? That changes the dynamic of relationships. And all of a sudden, we can approach other people too, if we approach it from the place of humility. And that's exactly what St. John Bosco's advice was. So he's one of my favorite saints, but he started the Salesian school, and he took on a bunch of orphan boys. That's what he would do. He'd find orphan boys, bring them to the school, teach them skills and whatever. But his rule for all of the priests in his order is, when you got the homeless boys that are inevitably do dumb things, and you want to grab them by the shoulders and scream, what were you thinking, you moron? Like, before he allowed any of his priests to go correct a boy, they had to first pause, time out, stop, and consider, what is one thing in myself that needs corrected? What is one thing in myself that needs addressed, needs healed, needs changed? If you're going to unleash your wrath somewhere, unleash it there, and then you can go correct the boy. Could you imagine if we did that? Could you imagine if we were able to like be in a place of like rootedness where we could invite feedback and not be crushed and not be defensive, but all of a sudden we open up a door for conversation? That's why I'm saying, brothers and sisters, that's why I'm saying these readings are incredibly, incredibly important This is daily stuff that we deal with. This is not a pie in the sky theological quandary. This is stuff that is very, very practical. So that's my challenge to you then, is to consider, am I being silent on a point that I should be speaking up on? Am I using niceness as a way of cowardice to not address a problem? Am I approaching something from charity and really seeking the good of that person and not just to be justified? And then, am I correctable? Am I coachable? Am I seeking feedback? I think if we started living those things, I think we'd see a big change in our relationships and the dynamic of our relationships, and ultimately would draw us closer to the God who calls us to love and to serve.